I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. Mitt Romney heads into caucus voting this week with a big win in Florida's primary. The former Massachusetts governor won over a diverse array of Republicans and showed his organization can compete with President Barack Obama. So what is Florida's role in the presidential election now? Also, the state's U.S. Senate race, legislative politics, and state Senate President Mike Haradopoulos kicks his 16-year friend Mike Fasano off of choice committee spots. We'll talk with Fasano about the debate over privatizing prisons that cost him his committee chairmanship later in the program. But up first, it's our monthly political roundup with 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry on Intersection. I'm joined by 90.7's political commentators, Democrat Dick Batchelor and Republican Lou Fry. Dick Batchelor, of course, former Democratic State House representative and president of the Dick Batchelor Management Group, joining us this session from Gainesville, Georgia. Dick, good to speak with you.
Thank you very much for having me by phone.
We are glad to have you. And also Lou Fry, former Republican congressman with Lowndes, Drostick, Doster, Cantor, and Reed, now a partner there. Lou, good to have you in.
Good to be in. I'm sure all your listeners will wish Dick's mother well, who's a recovering, but we want her recovering quicker.
Thank you.
So, guys, there was a little thing called the Florida primary that happened between the last time we spoke, and the results out of it, Mitt Romney, the winner by a large margin there. Lou Fry, does this mean that he's the inevitable GOP nominee?
No, nothing in politics is inevitable. Day's a lifetime. You can see the slip Romney made about the poor, and you know, which can take things up. There were two things, though, looking at the election, really three things that you came away with. Number one, having ground forces really is a plus because there were over 300 and some thousand absentee ballots, and Romney owned those. He probably took 250,000 vote lead. Secondly, if you can get a good commercial, you can go a long way. That commercial in Tom Brokaw was as good a commercial as I've ever seen in my political life, where he was just talking, reporting honestly a long time ago about Newt Gingrich and what happened, and they ran that, and it was they kept running it. And of course, the other thing was is that during the campaign, the second debate, Romney finally got fired up, and he made a very excellent reply to the people who said the free enterprise system isn't the way to go. And I think people liked that. They finally saw some fire in him, and all those things combined with Newt slips gave Romney a substantial win, but it's a minor win in terms of delegates. Only 5% of the delegates were taken care of in the first four primaries.
Well, Dick Batchelor, you know, polling going into primary night showed that Mitt Romney was likely to be ahead by a fair margin. Did anything surprise you about the way this primary unfolded?
Not really, and I want to tee off on what Lou said, and I agree with him, but two other factors, too. One is that negative campaign works. There were 13,000 ads, either for Romney or against Newt Gingrich, and Newt only had 200 ads in the media market, which is very expensive to do. So those ads, and I agree with Lou, really damaged him greatly, as evidenced by his lack of good showing in the election. And the other thing that has invited havoc on this campaign is something we've talked about before. Those are these independent super PACs. Since the Supreme Court decision, Citizens United basically says that a corporation is an individual, and thus they could give unlimited contributions to these independent PACs. They've spent a tremendous amount of money. It's estimated that probably $20 million have been spent in four states. So
that was just by Romney, right?
Negative ads work, yeah. And super PAC money works.
Yeah, it really does. And I think in our state, I think it was over $20 million compared to $5 million. Romney just drowned them with money.
Well, absolutely.
I wonder what you both think about the messaging that was coming through from Gingrich and primary night. He almost refused to acknowledge that he had lost and said this is now clearly a two-man contest between him being the true conservative and the Massachusetts liberal, Mitt Romney. So do you think, is Romney coming through as a moderate, or is he the true conservative?
Who knows?
How do you know?
And what can Newt sell? But the answer is he can't sell much without money. He's got five caucuses coming up and two primaries. How's he going to do in that? probably in everyone except one, Romney's favored going in and could pick up some votes. I think what Newt's trying to do is hang on till March 6th, which is the Super Tuesday, and you got a lot of southern states in the flow. Don't you think, Dick, if he can hang on and do well in that, he's okay. But if he doesn't do well in that, I think it's time to say hi, Yakaho, and disappear into the sunlight.
Yeah, but the question is whether Newt's arrogance and self-confidence will allow him to do that. But you make a very good point. If you look at in South Carolina and in Florida, about $11 million came from one person, one couple, a multi-billionaire casino owner in Las Vegas. And the question is, does that person still want to be the sugar daddy of the Newt Gingrich campaign? Can he get the money? I don't know whether he can or not. But I think Newt would try to stay in because I think Newt wants to do what Ron Paul does, and that is he wants to have an impression on the convention and the platform, whether or not he makes it there. Somebody yesterday said as a final note that he's burning all of his bridges, and I don't think he cares.
No, he's been selling a lot of books, too. You know, Ron Paul, though, is, I think, the big question mark for Republicans. You and I talked about it, Dick, and my position hasn't changed. If he runs as an independent, I don't care what the economy is or what the unemployment rate is, the Democrats will win the election.
And that's splitting the Republican vote is what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, he's got a lot of young people, a lot of conservatives are going to be very disappointed with him, and he's got some ideas in the international area which are not, I think, in the mainstream, but he's got some good ideas like a balanced budget and cutting, and so I think there's things the Republican Party can latch on. That tent has got to be big enough for Ron Paul and his supporters, or I'll tell you, the Republicans are not going to win, and we lost. I was with President Bush yesterday, Dick, in Houston.
Great.
That's President Bush the senior.
But yeah, and we're talking about this, and of course, Perot took 18.9% of the vote in that election. Your buddy Clinton took 43%, and Bush took 37.9%. And without Perot, you know, I don't think Bill Clinton would have won. And
Absolutely. And
there's a great example. I mean, you're just looking at a repeat of a bad show if you're a Republican.
Well, what happens, guys, if Newt Gingrich follows through with his promise to stay in for 46 more states? Does this just get nastier and nastier as it goes on, or does it drain away enthusiasm from anybody?
If he's funded, people are not going to throw money in a candidate that can't win. If that happens, his funding is going to dry up, his book sales will go down. And there comes a time when you're going to get out of it. If it goes reverse, you know, he'll stay and waiting for a lightning to strike, waiting for somebody to make a dumb remark to give him a chance.
Yeah, I think, you know, unless he's in the martyrdom, I think he eventually get out. But I still think Newt just won't get out because I think he sees his place in history. If he plays a part in the presidential election up to the nominating convention, here's a problem Mitt Romney has. If the three candidates, remaining candidates, stay in the race, they keep drawing for Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney, other than Miami, if you look at Broward County, Palm Beach County, Seminole County, Orange County, major counties, Romney still got less than 50% of the vote. So that means 50% of the people voting in the Republican primary still aren't voting for him. The longer somebody stays in to detract from him, he's going to have to spend an infusion of dollars to try to solidify his base. If you're trying to solidify your base going into the general election, if you don't have it solidified, you've got troubles, no matter how much money you've got.
You know, I thought it was interesting. I looked at some of the numbers as they were coming in, and I was looking to see if there was any kind of bump that Gingrich might get out on the Space Coast because he unveiled that grandiose plan with a moon base or anything like that, and it didn't seem – it seemed his numbers were fairly consistent.
He asked me to come when he was in town and give him all the stuff I've written on the space program, and I supposed to do it, and I did. I went to where he was, and this was a meeting I'd do for any candidate – and he was just coming back from the Space Coast. He'd already made that statement, which on the surface just doesn't make any sense. I mean, and the people over the Space Coast know what the problem is. They know we don't have all the money we need. They know we need a rocket or a vehicle that'll get us back up into the space station, but you're not going to build I mean, that's just so out of it. And it didn't work. Matter of fact, it had the reverse. It had a very negative effect.
I wonder, Dick Batchelor, do you think that I-4 corridor was swinging in any way in the favor of Newt Gingrich? Was he able to grab a foothold anywhere in the state?
No, in the Panhandle, North Florida, in the Panhandle, there were some, you know, close counties, but you aren't playing horseshoes, so it really didn't matter in the end. I see now where he is contesting the allocation of the delegates, but, you know, that gets into the real weeds because right now Florida is being faced with losing all of its delegates because they decided to go with the early primary. So So it's a real debate of who gets the delegates to begin with. But Newt will try everything he can. He rolls a grenade in the tent. He doesn't care what the collateral damage is. He doesn't care who gets hurt. He doesn't care if the truth is denied. That's just the way he's running right now, and he's the most dangerous guy out there.
Well, yeah, Lou Fry talked about this because you have pointed out that this winner-takes-all scenario that Florida has could bring up some trouble, and now we're seeing it.
We had two things we did wrong according to the rules. The first is we had an early primary, and we had 100 delegates. We're down to 50. That's where we are to start with.
That's for moving the date.
That's for moving the date. Then the other one was you can't have a winner-take-all primary until April 1st.
How come?
Because the National Committee says it. They wanted to draw out the election. And so we said, the heck with that, we're going to have it. And so what's happened now is Newt is complaining, talking about suing, saying we violated, Florida violated the rules, and he ought to, I think, 30% of the 50 delegates. So he ought to get 15 delegates for the convention. And, you know, if it's a close race like the Ford-Reagan one, I was in on that, where every vote counts, whoever controls, like, their credentials committee, even though Florida's a host city, could throw all our votes out, which I don't think is going to happen. The Republican Party can't be that dumb. I mean, maybe they'll give us a bounces and take 5 or 10 more away from it, or maybe they'll just let it go and forget. But Newt isn't going to let people forget, so that puts another spin on it.
I mean, with all the talk here back and forth, I mean, it just sounds like the longer that Newt Gingrich stays in, this campaign is going to get pretty ugly towards the end.
Yeah. And, you know, Nick, Obama started the Republican campaign, I think, with a 34% approval rating, in that range, right? Well, the Republicans, using your term, have had a circular firing squad, and so far they've been a great help. Obama's done nothing, has spent little money, and I think his approval rating back is getting up close to 50. I mean, if he just shuts up and doesn't do anything and the Republicans keep doing this, it's going to be a long election night.
And that's the point. I want to go back to the point that was inferred by Lou, too. Again, the theme here is, as long as Mitt Romney cannot focus on the general election, cannot totally focus on attacking the president, he gets further and further behind, whether it's a fight with Newt, a fight with Ron Paul, a platform fight, and now his misstep about I don't care about poor people, followed by an endorsement by Donald Trump.
What great timing, right?
Great timing. Great, I mean, just reinforces it. So he's getting a lot of bad advice and maybe panicking in some phases here.
Well, let me ask you about that, Dick Batra. Let's make a parallel comparison between what happened in the Florida governor's race. You had Rick Scott and Bill McCollum really duking it out there until the end. And then, you know, Alex Sink didn't really have to say too much, but she ended up losing in the end.
Yeah, no, she did. But this is I think it's a different picture because in other ones, it's just not the two. You've got four candidates here holding on, and people try to kiss and make up. But here's an interesting question that I'd like to throw out to you, and maybe you and Lou have an opinion. But two things that really fascinated me about this campaign: the governor endorsed no one. It begs the question: did anyone ask the governor to endorse them? Because he's at 35% in the popularity poll. And why did not Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush endorse in the Republican primary in the presidential race?
Well, I can tell you, I think Rubio's pretty clear, and we've, you know, had talks with him in the past. I think the best thing for Rubio to do is keep his head down, his mouth shut, pick his spots to make speeches. He's got a big future. I think he's one of the leading Republicans now, and I think he'll continue to be. So why come in something like this that might be a real mess? If you are a vice president in a campaign that gets trashed, that rubs off on you. You don't get a free walk on that kind of thing. So Rubio, at his age, he can sit back 4 years, 8 years, you know. And
isn't that the same thing that Governor Jeb Bush is doing, though?
Well, it is, and I was with Jeb's father yesterday.
Any news on that front?
Well, we talked a lot about the Florida campaign and so forth. I don't think I wouldn't put words in his mouth, but I don't think he's a fan of Newt's, which is probably no surprise.
I don't think you put words in his mouth.
Yeah. I think Jeb is looking down the line at it again. I don't think he thinks this is the time, and he's pretty smart politically. Of course, the other thing is, Rubio has a better last name than Bush in the sense the country's bushed out. I mean, you know, that's a fact. I like him. I like Jeb.
Well, I was just reading an article in the New York Times the other day that was indicating perhaps Jeb Bush might be looking for a vice presidential slot and build back up credibility with the name that way, not being on the primary tier the first time through.
Well, certainly Romney and the Bushes aren't too far apart, I don't think, in the way they worked in philosophy and so forth, that it might be a comfortable position for him. And for Jeb's thing, if he doesn't run for the Senate, it may be a once-in-a-lifetime chance. I mean, look what Lyndon Johnson did, running with Kennedy. Everybody said that was impossible, it wouldn't happen. And he did, and you know, and then history took over.
We saw how things worked out. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFV-FM. I'm talking with political commentators Democrat Dick Batchelor and Republican Lou Fry. I'm Mark Simpson. Where do you think the Florida primary leaves the presidential race? You can tell us your thoughts on Facebook and Twitter or send an email over to intersection at WMFV.org. Let's shift gears, guys, a little bit and talk about the U.S. Senate race.
Yeah, okay, that's good. I wanted to just say one thing about Santorum. I don't think he's going to get out. I think he's in a wonderful position like Governor Huckabee was. I think he's going to stay in as long as he can, and he'll probably come out of it pretty good no matter what happens. I'm sorry, but let's get back. Now we'll get back to the
Senate. No, you're right. This is a very interesting contest, and it's going to continue to be. But another interesting contest, this U.S. Senate race, man, we have seen people ducking out left and right recently. You've got Craig Miller getting out of the race. You also had Adam Hasner dropping out. So the field is narrowing against U.S. Senator Bill Nelson, and it's looking more and more like a Connie Mack-Nelson race. What do you think there, Lou Fry?
Well, I think that Bill Nelson is a tough candidate. He's been there a while. He's an honorable person. Works hard. He's trying his best to be run as an independent Democrat and stay away from Obama. Connie Mack has a good name. His family has a good name. He's got the resources of money opened up to him, and he's going to be a tough candidate. You tell me where the economy is going to be, and you're probably looking at the winner.
You see Connie Mack also lining up with Mitt Romney, right?
I believe so. Yeah, I think he did earlier before he announced for the Senate.
So Dick Batchelor, what does that mean then if you see Connie Mack pairing up with Mitt Romney? You saw the last time that the president visited the Orlando area, Bill Nelson was not there at Disney World. So what does Bill Nelson do? Does he stay away from the president in this contest?
You know, I think, you know, some people will temper their appearances with the president. It's not unlike the midterm in second re-election of Bill Clinton in 1996 and a midterm in 98. But I think Lou's right. You know, he's always been, I would say, middle to left, moderate to left kind of a candidate, but he's got the issues to run on. He's got a record. And I think what Connie Mack has to get ready for now that it's down to him and Lemieux in the primary, essentially there are other candidates but not on the radar screen, whether or not Lemieux is going to spend any of his money in the primary going after Connie Mack, because you've got to win. You know, as we discussed about the presidential campaign, you've got to certainly at least delineate your position from your opponent. So the question is if they're going to spend any money trying to attack each other and start taking some of the veneer off of Connie Mack, because he is a strong candidate.
Well, I also, did you have anything else on that, Luke?
I didn't, but that's going to be a money thing. You're going to see the money machines in there and those super PACs, which I think are terrible. I think we ought to do away from those super PACs are probably going to decide that race.
I also do want to weigh in on the legislative session. We're actually at the midpoint, which is hard to imagine because usually we're in the spring, but because they moved the session up, we're actually halfway through about. They're moving forward with this $69.2 billion budget, and really interesting stuff up in Tallahassee just recently. Senator Mike Fasano stripped of his committee positions, including his chairmanship on the subcommittee that oversees budget for prisons. This gets into this whole debate over prison privatization. We're going to hear from Senator Fasano later in the program, but I wonder, Lou Fry, what's your reaction to that? Just politics?
Yeah, Dick has seen this up there and that. It's legislative group in session. There is one thing, though, I'd like to step back a little and look at, and that's the fact that the governor decided he wanted to be a governor and not a chief executive officer, and he learned that he can't run the state as a business. You can apply good business principles, but you can't dictate. You have to work with the Senate, the House, with the other people up there, and he's been trying. You got to give him credit for at least trying. He held the State of the Union in Tallahassee, where it should be, instead of the villages.
A change of pace.
Yep. He's been talking to the leaders of both the House and Senate in terms of where he's going. It's a difficult budget. I think the health care is really getting scorched, if you will, a little bit. We've cut a couple billion out of the education. We're putting a billion back. it's really tough, and hopefully next year, for all our sakes, that we won't be working off such a deficit.
Things are fluid up in Tally. Dick Basser, what do you think about that, though? Not often you see a senator getting stripped out of all those committee positions.
Well, first of all, I think Senate President Herodopoulos has made a Napoleonic overreach by firing his chairman because the chairman disagrees with prison privatization. That's what this whole thing is about. Keep in mind, last year they tried to privatize 28 prisons in Florida by using proviso language. The court said that's unconstitutional, which most of us believe it to be. They're now trying to privatize them again. They're getting a lot of pushback from their own Republicans. I guess that frustrates the Senate president, but you don't relieve your committee chair based on that. So it's in trouble. And the other big issue, and that was one that's unexpected, but the other big issue is reapportionment. You saw where the federal courts have upheld Article Amendments 5 and 6 in the Constitution, even though Congresswoman Corinne Brown and Speaker of the House had filed a lawsuit to that end. But now the courts have ruled in support of Amendments 5 and 6 and reapportionment and redistricting. So I think that's an expected ruling by the court, but one that will now really force the legislative process to draft redistricting plans as close to the mandates of those two amendments as possible.
Which hurts Corrine Brown's chance of reelection.
Yes.
Well, guys, that's just about the time we have for this session. So I want to say thank you so much to Dick Bansler joining us from Gainesville, Georgia this time. And, of course, our thoughts with you, Dick.
Thank you very much.
And Dick Batchelor, of course, is former Democratic State Representative and founder of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. That other voice in studio with us each time, Lou Fry, former Republican Congressman, now partner with Lounge Drostic, Dr. Cantor and Reed. Always a pleasure.
Always good to be here. And Dick, God bless you, and you're in our prayers.
Coming up on Intersection, we talk with State Senator Mike Fasano about losing his committee chairmanship positions over the debate to privatize prisons in Florida. There's a storm building in Tallahassee as the legislature debates efforts to privatize prisons in South Florida. Legislative leaders like Senate President Mike Herodopoulos are pushing to privatize nearly 30 Department of Corrections facilities. Companies like the GEO Group or Corrections Corporation of America would love to have those contracts. The debate culminated in the middle of last week when Senate President Herodopoulos stripped Newport Richey Republican Mike Fasano from his chairmanship of the Criminal Justice Budget Subcommittee and the main Senate Budget Committee. Here's what Herodopoulos had to say.
I've known Senator Fasano for 13 years. We are friends. But as President of the Senate, I have an absolute responsibility to make sure that we pass a balanced budget and we do it in the most effective way possible. And I just felt I had lost confidence in him to fulfill that mission.
Here to talk about the situation is Senator Mike Fasano of Newport Richey. Senator Fasano, good to speak with you.
Good morning. Thank you very much for allowing me to participate.
This prison privatization plan has been building now for a couple of years in the legislature, 2 years about. Why are things coming to a head right now?
They're coming to a head because they did not sneak it in the budget as they did last year, because leadership and the governor knew that it would be a tough battle by bringing it up as a single issue. In fact, as you know, it was tossed out of the budget, not by the governor, not by a legislature, but by a judge, saying that it is a policy issue. It's a single subject issue, an issue that should not have been put into the budget as proviso language. It should be an issue that is a piece of legislation. This year, they could not find a Senate sponsor, so they created a bill in a procedural committee, a rules committee, which is unprecedented, a bill that would privatize 18 counties, as you indicated, almost 30 correctional facilities. And, of course, what leadership and the governor are finding out in Tallahassee is that both Republicans and Democrats are joining together to oppose the expansion of such a policy to turn over these taxpayer-paid-for facilities over private companies so they can make a profit.
And what would you describe as the mood in your own chamber right now? It looks like the vote's not in place to pass this bill through. The Senate president pulled it from being heard on the floor. So how would you describe it? Is this a close vote, or are there big differences?
No, it's extremely close vote. I have amendments that would do several things, but probably one of the most important amendments would be to strike the bill completely and insert a study. You know, you keep hearing all of these numbers about we're going to say the taxpayers will save this amount, the taxpayers will save that amount. Then we hear that the taxpayers may actually lose money the first year and with the uncertainty of saving any money for years after. I would like, at the minimum, a study to be done by our economic legislative body that would come back with the true facts and estimations of whether it's good for taxpayers or not. But the bottom line is we also need to know the economic impact it's going to have on the almost 4,000 correctional officers and their families that could potentially and probably will lose their jobs, and how that's also going to affect the communities and the economies where those correctional families live.
Now, Senator, you're talking about asking to conduct an economic study. That sounds like a logical thing to do. Are you suggesting that that has not been done?
Absolutely not been done, because no one can answer the question as to what kind of savings we're going to see. We keep hearing estimates from, you know, $15 million up to $45 million, but we know that at least in the first year, if the correctional officers are relieved of their job within the Department of Corrections, it'll be a cost to the taxpayers of $18 million, almost $19 million, because of the benefits that we would have to pay out. So definitely in the first year, the taxpayers will not save any money at all. But also, they've got it where we're going to turn over each of these facilities that were paid for by the taxpayers of Florida. Some of the facilities are still being paid off. The bonds are still being paid off by the taxpayers. The total amount of facilities that are a value of a $500 million, that's $500 million, are being turned over to two private companies that have no skin in the game, that have invested no money into these facilities, and yet we're going to pay them a check every month, the taxpayers are, so they can make a profit. Why don't we just tell the Department of Corrections to reduce their budget and come up with a savings of 7%, so we don't have to turn public prisons over to private companies that trade on the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, let me ask you about that. The issue of privatizing prisons and private prisons in Florida has been going on for a while. I can think of that private prison that was constructed not far from Pensacola
Blackwater.
That was very controversial. And
yeah.
So the Department of Corrections, one of the largest state agencies with one of the largest budgets in Florida, do you see other money-saving options that you would like to see considered for the DOC?
Absolutely. In fact, we're seeing it already. We have, come the end of this year, you'll have the capability of 116,000 beds. And with that said, we have about 100,000 prisoners, and crime is down. And crime is down because of the good, tough laws that we've put on the books to stop the revolving door at our prisons, and also because of very good law enforcement and our state attorneys and our law enforcement agencies, sheriff's departments, city, county police throughout the state are doing a wonderful job. And so what we need to do is to focus in on how we reduce the cost of at the Department of Corrections. And what they're doing, and I support, is looking at some of the older, archaic, expensive prisons that we no longer need to be running, that they're just too expensive to run. And we can close those prisons down because you can consolidate. You don't need 116,000 prison beds when you only have 100,000 prisoners. There we can save money, but we don't need to be turning them over to a private company, put people's safety at risk, and allowing two companies to benefit off the backs of the taxpayers.
That's Newport Richey State Senator Mike Fasano, who was stripped from his chairman position of a subcommittee that oversees prison budgets in Florida. Senator, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Have a great day. God bless you.
Thank you. And I appreciate it.
Anytime. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.